any bells to ring. I left them upstairs. Well, that's you. So that's, I could use that as a little a cue for the recording, too. You know, it's like, welcome to 2011. Yeah. We're halfway through the month already. That's kind of amazing, isn't it? So I wanted to continue talking about the six perfections, which we introduced 2 weeks ago. And I'll review what that means for everybody. And Brian asked me to talk about the two wings of enlightenment, which is how we got to the six perfections. And Tom asked me to talk about emptiness, which is, that's good, that's one of the perfections, so that's what we'll do. So let me do a little bit of backtrack. The Tibetans say that to become a Buddha, to become enlightened, there are two wings to the practice to become enlightened. And eventually all of us will become enlightened. But in this lifetime, the point of the two wings is that they speak to the kind of practices we do to improve our lives, to improve our circumstances, which is maybe the best way to think about things rather than thinking about things from the point of view of anything as profound as becoming enlightened. In fact, in the Mahayana tradition, they say that it takes three incalculable eons of lifetimes to become enlightened. So it's good to practice the perfection of patience, which is one of the six perfections, because it's going to take a while. Unless, of course, you practice Tantra, in which case you can get there in one lifetime, which is the reason we practice Tantra. But most of us are probably too lazy to get there in one lifetime, so it's someplace between one lifetime and three incalculable eons. I don't know which. Anyhow, the point is that there are sort of six skills, if you will, to develop or to work on in spiritual practice, Buddhist spiritual practice, which move you through the path to enlightenment, whether it's in one lifetime or three incalculable eons. You still have to do the same thing. And depending upon how well you can engage with these six types of practices, then you'll get there sooner or later. So to review what the six practices are, they're the perfections of giving, morality, patience, concentration, wisdom. That's only five. Oh, vigor. There it is, vigor. Giving, morality, patience, vigor, concentration, wisdom. So the two wings of enlightenment, one wing is wisdom, and the other wing are the other five. And the other way that Buddhists talk about this is that practicing wisdom creates the mind of a Buddha. It creates an enlightened mind. And practicing the other five perfections creates the body of a Buddha. So right off, it's interesting to think about the fact that in this tradition, they are not talking about merely mental cultivation. They're talking about practices and activities which don't just change your body, but change the world. And when they're talking about wisdom, they're talking about practices which don't just change your mind, but change the collective mind. And I'll loop back to that at some point. But what I want to focus on more now is that there are these two kind of coarse groupings of one wing, which is the wisdom practices, and the other wing, which is the artful or meritorious skillful activities. And I'm using these kinds of languages because scholars have used all those languages to translate this idea. And these things work together. They all work together. So let me talk first about wisdom and then focus back on the other five and hopefully explain how they all work together. So wisdom, in the Buddhist sense, has a very specific definition. It's not something that's abstract. It's something that's very specific. Wisdom is a type of mind or an awareness or a consciousness which is the opposite of what's called ignorance. And ignorance is what we're all suffering from. So ignorance in Buddhism doesn't mean being stupid. It means misunderstanding. So if I say we're all ignorant, it doesn't mean that we're all uneducated, that we're all stupid, or that we're all willfully not paying attention, but rather that we have ingrained habits from, if you believe in reincarnation, former lives, or ingrained habits developed in this life, if you want to view it from that point of view, which consistently dispose you to misunderstand what's going on. And that's what ignorance is. Ignorance is a systematic misunderstanding, not understanding of what's really going on around you. And it takes three forms. Buddhists are very good at classifying things. And it's a tradition that comes from being pre-literate, because the Buddha couldn't read or write, and that was not a big deal, even though he was a prince, because nobody could read or write, literally. Nobody, because there wasn't any writing to write. There were no written languages in his time. So everything had to be remembered, and it was remembered by categorizing. So that's why we can talk about two wings, six perfections. Wisdom is the opposite of ignorance, and ignorance has this characteristic, and wisdom has these three characteristics. So the characteristic of ignorance is a misunderstanding of what's going on. The antidote, or the opposite, which is wisdom, has three characteristics, which are seeing things as being the results of causes. So ignorance is thinking that things are not a result of causes. Wisdom is seeing that things are always results of causes. Ignorance would be seeing everything as just the way it appears as a whole entity, not made up out of parts. Wisdom is seeing that everything is made up out of parts. And so where does whole entity come from? That's the third aspect of wisdom, which is understanding that our minds put concepts onto complex, dynamic activities which arise over time, which are the result of causes that are made up of parts. We put a concept on it and we see it as a single, whole, unchanging thing that seems to be exactly just as it presents itself to us. So wisdom is seeing that it's not any of those three things, that nothing is any of those three things, and ignorance is thinking that everything is those three things. So let me be specific. Okay, so our bodies are a good opportunity for understanding what wisdom refers to. So we don't see ourselves as made up of parts. I mean, I get up in the morning and I'm shaving and I'm washing my face and whatever, and I look in the mirror and there's David. But really, what's there? Well, what's there is some light reflected on a mirror, for one thing, and a concept that what's in the mirror is me. But I'm perfectly happy to be, you know, shaving away without thinking about any of that stuff. But if I think about it, I see that it's true, that what's appeared in the mirror to me is actually a complex phenomenon which I'm thoroughly ignoring because I'm busy shaving. And if I turn it around and say, if I just look at my body, I look at my hand, and I just see a hand. Well, Friday I was at the doctor's office, and I'm quite sure that when my physician looks at my hand, that's not what she sees. I mean, she might just look at my hand and see a hand, but if she really stopped to think about it because of her training as a physician, she'd see skin and muscle and blood, and she'd see all that stuff there that's there because, you know, she's dissected cadavers and she knows how the whole thing works. So, you know, I'm always thinking that physicians must go through kind of an interesting time of things, that they pretty much don't pay attention to what they're actually looking at unless they have to pay attention to what they're looking at. And then they see muscles and blood and whatnot, and the rest of the time they just see a hand. So in a sense, they slip back and forth between ignorance and wisdom in that particular way. So, because everything's composed of parts, and those are the parts. And everything depends upon causes, which is the reason it changes. The reason things change is because this complex depends upon other elements that are required for this to come together. For example, back to the visit to the doctor. She said she'd had me doing a bone density scan. She said, you know, you're getting to the age, we need to know what's going on with the density of your bones. I said, psh, I'm fine. I've been weight training for 30 years. Turns out, nope, not so. It's because I'm 64, and it doesn't matter if I've been weight training for 30 years. When you're 64, you lose, you know, bone density. And she said, okay, you need to start taking calcium. So what's happened? You know, so I mean, she's looking, I mean, she's thinking, when she looks at my hand, she's thinking hand, bones, what have you. But what's there has been changing over time. I don't see that. I don't see that. But in fact, it's true. I mean, in every moment, this complex of muscle, bone, blood, what have you, is in the condition it's in based upon previous circumstance. I'm thinking that the bones are going to be dense because I've been weight training. She's saying, no, you've been alive 64 years. The bones are not going to be dense. Okay. I mean, you can kind of pursue the idea of everything arises in dependence on causes pretty far along that way. Ultimately, what you get to is your parents. I mean, you exist in dependence upon a man and a woman. You exist in dependence upon your parents. If they hadn't come together in this particular moment, this complex of muscles, so on and so forth, wouldn't even exist. Moreover, if I hadn't been breathing air, drinking water, eating relatively nutritious food over this long period of time, what's here would be very different. You know, instead of being relatively healthy, if I'd, you know, not gotten a good education, not earned a reasonable living, I'd be eating a lot of junk food instead of nice organic health food, courtesy of my wife going shopping. And, you know, I'd probably be sitting here weighing 50 pounds more and, you know, probably pre-diabetic or diabetic because I would have been eating a lot of junk food and what have you. So the circumstances of all of this period of time also has come together to create what's happening here. And then I think me, David, I mean, I don't see any of that stuff. I just think David. But really, you know, David is just the mask or the cover or the label that holds all that stuff together. So I hopefully that makes sense. Anyhow, those three ways of understanding any phenomenon, because you can talk about a house, a tree, a person, any phenomenon, understood from those three points of view. If you see that phenomenon from those three points of view, then you're exercising wisdom. And if you just see the phenomenon as if it's not dependent, not made up of parts, and it is exactly what it is, irrespective of your labeling it, then you're ignorant in Buddhist terms. So practicing understanding that is practicing wisdom. But that supports the other five perfections. The other five perfections, for example, one of the perfections is giving or generosity. So We think typically of generosity as I give something to you, I have something left. I have less because I've given something to you. You have more, I have less. That's typically the way we think about generosity or giving. But when we see the actual condition of how we all relate to each other in this large complex field we all exist in, then when you give, when you're generous, actually it's not like you have less and somebody else has more. But in the process of giving, you can exercise an attitude of understanding your relationship with another, which actually reduces the notion of separation from the other, or independence, or even the idea of more or less, I've given something up, you've gained something, and this sort of thing. The same with vigor, the same with morality. These are all ways of understanding the way in which wisdom, these are all ways of practicing wisdom in the material world, in the interactive world. Maybe that's the best way to phrase it. Concentration is an interesting example. The perfection of concentration is, or the cultivation of concentration is something that would be required for successful meditation, concentrating your mind on the practice that you're doing. But interestingly, wisdom, actually the practice of wisdom, concentrates the mind. Because why is the mind not concentrated? The mind is distracted, or you're distracted, because of what? Some attitudes that you have toward what's going on around you, in the world around you, circumstances that have happened, and so on and so forth. When you're practicing wisdom, you see through the things that are distracting you, because most of the time you'll see that they're fictitious ideas, that they're based upon wrong notions of what's going on. When you see that, the mind resolves itself away from being kind of dragged off by the passions and by those various ideas. So wisdom reinforces concentration. And concentration reinforces wisdom, because when your mind is concentrated, you can go back to remembering what it is you're trying to pay attention to in the way you're trying to pay attention to it. So these things all work together over time to support each other. And the cultivation of the one set, interestingly, does in fact change the body. And the cultivation of wisdom does in fact change the mind. So that the mind changes by practicing wisdom, that probably doesn't seem like a big deal. We'd understand that. That the mind or the body changes, that the mind would change by practicing concentration, that probably doesn't come as a surprise. But that the body changes by practicing concentration, that might come as a surprise. That the body would change by practicing morality would perhaps be a surprise, or generosity. But the Buddhists say that your body is the accumulation of all the activities in this world that you've been engaging in for your entire life. So if you engage in activities that are problematic in some way, you end up with a body that effectively shows those activities. I think that, don't we have a way of saying this in English, that you get the face you deserve at a certain point in your life?
Tibetan saying.
Is that a Tibetan saying?
Yeah.
Oh. All right, well, you get the face that you deserve by the time you're an old person. We know this too. I mean, you can look at people and you can see the lives that, you can see the life they've been leading by looking at people. You can see people who spend a lifetime being nasty to other people. It's not too hard. You see it written all over them. And people who've been really sweet and kind to other people, you see that written all over them too. So if we think about it, we can understand how these different specific kind of activities do change the body. So I think that's all I have to say for the evening. That was quite a lot anyway. So we can come back to talking about, these specifics, but during the question and answer. But The six perfections are the foundation of the Buddhist Mahayana path, and finding ways to practice them and to engage with these attitudes are actually what everything is about. So when we're teaching meditation here, meditation practice, we're teaching practices that, although it may not be always apparent how, cultivate wisdom. Obviously, if you're practicing these things, cultivates concentration. But you can also see how the practices cultivate generosity, because when you're doing the meditation practices, there's a lot of opportunity to rehearse giving and taking, for example. I mean, how generous is it to imagine sending beatific rays of light out to the entire universe? That's a relatively generous activity. So I'll leave it.